Blog Talk Radio.
It's Wednesday, May 7, 2014. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chesko. Welcome back, partner.
Hey, Bill. Good to talk to you again. Looking forward to tonight's show.
Yes, sir. We survived week one and a couple technical problems, but we have them corrected, and we're moving forward. Unfortunately, since we talked last, the Flyers were eliminated. Hockey season ended for this fan. I don't even know who's doing what in the games and don't care. But the Flyers did make an interesting move today, promoting Ron Hextall to general manager and Paul Holmgren to team president. But those moves will have to wait till another day, because today we're talking Eagles.
Yeah, Bill, there's nothing like the NFL draft, and that's what we're going to talk about primarily tonight. For me, it's almost as exciting as opening weekend of the NFL season. So it's a key time for a lot of these clubs to shape their team for the next season, and we're going to talk tonight about what the Eagles might do and what some of the other teams are going to do in the first and or second round.
Yeah. You know, it's hard to believe that it's already May, you know. Time flies by. It's football season's just around the corner. And, of course, that means Eagles in the draft. And, you know, with the draft starting tomorrow, I'm really excited about our show tonight and our special guest.
Me as well, Bill. You know, the draft has traditionally been held in late April, but there was a scheduling conflict at Radio City Music Hall this year, so the league moved the draft into May. But now, as I understand it, the NFL plans to continue holding the draft in May in future years as part of a permanent off-season calendar change. Anyway, it all begins a little over 24 hours from now, the first round taking place, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow, followed then by the second and third rounds on Friday. They'll start at 7 p.m. Friday. Rounds 4 through 7 will be held Saturday, starting right at 12 noon. This year's draft is said to be one of the deepest in terms of talent in many years, thanks in part to the fact that a record 98 underclassmen, I think it was, announced their intention to forego their remaining NCAA eligibility and declare themselves available to be selected in the draft. So it should be very interesting, and we're going to see what happens over the next few days.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that the Eagles only have 6 picks in this draft. They have the 22nd pick in every round except the 6th. They haven't moved up or moved down, so there's only 6 guys coming to the Eagles via the draft unless they make some moves. So with that said, partner, let's get the show rolling, and we'll bring our special guest on the Shop for Kisses phone lines. Fran Duffy, welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable.
Bill, Chet, thanks for having me on.
All right, Fran, we know that your passion is the draft and evaluating players. You've become a local draft legend guru. I'll take your evaluations and put them against anyone. So you work for the Eagles. Tell us about that. Tell us what you do for the Eagles, and where did your passion for the draft come from and come about?
Well, I'll start with the second part of that. I guess it really started, you know, years ago. Obviously, being a football fan, growing up a huge Eagles fan, I always became attracted to the draft. And, you know, obviously, you know, all fans know that's how the teams are built. And I always kind of had a thing for how teams were built, and, you know, whether it was, you know, football or hockey or basketball, baseball, however the teams were built, you know, building the franchise, building your organization from the ground up was always something that kind of interested me. I've, you know, read, you know, dozens of books on the subject. And, you know, obviously the football evaluation part, you know, continued to grow with time and obviously is still growing. I'll never be done learning that, but it's, you know, something I have a great passion for. I've, you know, put a lot of work into it. And for the Eagles now, I'm a TV producer. So I produce a show locally on 6ABC during the season called Eagles Game Plan. And it's hosted by Brian Baldinger, Ike Reese, former Eagle, and Mike Quick as well. So 3 former Eagles that are, you know, in the media right now. And, you know, it's an X's and O's show. Every week we go to the tape and, you know, break down the All-22 of what went right, what went wrong for the Eagles this past week, and looking ahead at the opponent. Chip Kelly's on the show. You know, NFL Film Senior Producer Greg Cosell's on the show, and Ron Jaworski this fall as well. So it's a great show, and have a lot of fun producing it. And then the fall, I'm, you know, all draft all the time. So, you know, it's lots of different features. I produce for PhiladelphiaEagles.com. We've got a podcast once a week. I write a column once a week. So it's been a lot of fun. I'm growing my role as we move along here in the past few years. And it's just all about content. It's all about content in the off season and, you know, preparing for the fall.
Nice, nice. Now, don't you do something? Is it? Do you have your own website or is it a Facebook page? I read a real good thing you had done back in the Lions game, the snow game, where you had broken down with pictures in it and all that of the different blocking schemes and the run schemes and where we turned that game around and went on to dominate there in the second half. Where did I see that?
Well, that's actually my column on PhiladelphiaEagles.com called Eagle Eye in the Sky. It's a twice-a-week article. It started as once a week in the fall early, and then as the interest grew and the numbers piled up, we started making it twice a week. Monday after the game, you know, obviously you guys know Tuesday, Wednesday, you'll see that's when the media finally gets a hold of that all 22 and can post their film evaluations of the previous game. But for Eagles game plan, I get that film, you know, when the coaches do. I get that Sunday night, Monday morning, so I'm able to, you know, turn that article around and I get that out Monday afternoon. So, you know, real quick, you know, obviously Sunday, the game's on Sunday. The next day you get kind of a look at the All-22, you know, see what went right, what went wrong for the Eagles. And then later on that week I'll take a look at the opponent, and it's kind of an opponent preview and what they do well and players to worry about and matchups to watch for the upcoming game.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to make a note of that because the one on the Lions was just outstanding, and it was so broken down, and it made it so elementary that it was great reading, and had the pictures to go with it.
So, I appreciate it. I think that fans now are starting to get more interest in that side of it, where you know that's been kind of the. It hasn't really been on fans' radar looking at the game in that way. And I think if more fans are starting to look at football from an academic point of view and want to learn, you know, what goes into it, you know, and it's something that I'm starting to capitalize on. And I'm hoping that I can continue to, you know, show fans, you know, things that they didn't previously know.
That's great. That's great. I did have one question for you. Since I've known you, you've worked for Coach Golden, Al Golden at Temple. You worked for Coach Reed and Coach Kelly with the Eagles. Is there a real huge difference in these guys as head coaches and how that affects what you do, or is it you pretty much know your job and know what they need?
Well, you know, when I was with Temple, it was a much different role that I had in the organization. You know, there I was in charge of all football video, so all practice tape and game tape, all the coaching clinics and teach tapes and manuals and really just kind of what I mean, it really helped set me up for what the role I have now with the Eagles, where, you know, I was able to kind of learn the game from a great coaching staff and just try and soak up as much as I could from all those guys. Obviously looking back, I wish I continued to learn more because, you know, you can never know enough, but, you know, that it really kind of helped me get a base knowledge of the game and what coaches look for from a technique standpoint, especially at certain positions and, you know, schematically how to game plan for opponents and, you know, what you do when you're scouting the other team. So it's obviously a lot went into that. And then, you know, I don't work with the coaches here at the Eagles as closely as I did at Temple, but obviously it's, you know how it is. I mean, these guys are all hard workers. They're all, you know, focused on game day and, you know, looking to the next Sunday. So, it's been a great experience so far. I've been in football now for, this will be season number 9 coming up. So, it's been quite the ride.
Great, great. Well, it's great to have you with us. We're looking forward to talking Eagles. What we want to do for the remainder of the hour, we want to talk offense, defense, special teams, the free agents that have been signed and lost. Look at where you think the team's draft priorities will be. And, of course, we want to take a look at your first-round big board and see how you have everybody going everywhere. And what's going to be fun about that for both Chet and I is we have not heard your big board either. So as listeners are hearing it, we'll be hearing it too. So that'll be fun. We would like to tell everyone that our Shop for Kisses phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855. feel free to call us throughout the show. We'll try to get you on as we get breaks in our conversations. We do ask that all language be professional. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful to other people's opinions. So with the house rules in place, Chet, you're up. Let's take a look at the offense.
All right, Bill, lots to talk about. Let's review. What have the Birds done since they lost that game against the New Orleans Saints at the Link back on January 4th, the playoff game, 26-24? Well, they gave new deals to center Jason Kelce, six-time Pro Bowl tackle Jason Peters, wide receiver Riley Cooper after his breakout year, and they worked out a one-year deal with another key wide receiver, Jeremy Maclin, who, of course, missed all of last year with that torn ACL suffered during training camp. That in the hope that he can come close to his 2012 numbers, 69 catches for 857 yards and 7 touchdowns. Also, then, within a span of one hectic week in early March, the Eagles acquired all-purpose running back Darren Sproles from the Saints in a trade, plus four guys on defense that Bill will probably mention a bit later, including safety Malcolm Jenkins, and they re-signed punter Donnie Jones. And, yeah, he's a punter, but Donnie Jones had just a terrific 2013 campaign with the Birds, landing 33 punts inside the 20-yard line. Later then, the Eagles signed quarterback Mark Sanchez to join USC Trojan alum like himself, Matt Barkley, in backing up Nick Foles. A lot of people, understandably, are excited about the addition of Sproles, and he could be a huge addition, but it's not a given. Keep in mind that he'll be 31 this summer, and that is getting up there for a running back, and the Saints were willing to part with him for a fifth-round pick. Now, on the other hand, even though his numbers were down last season, he did catch 71 passes. That's not bad. His career rushing average is still a bit over 5 yards per carry. That's very good. And I'm sure Chip Kelly already has lots of ideas about how he'll use this new toy. Of course, it'll help greatly if Maclin comes back healthy, if Cooper could have another solid year, and if Foles and Shady McCoy also stay on the field and at least come close to the kind of numbers that they put up in the team's 10-6 2013 season. And by the way, Aurelius Ben, who missed all of 2013 with a knee injury, he'll be fighting for a spot and could contribute as well in terms of wide receivers. Now, Sproles is the key draft pre-draft addition on offense. Who's gone? Well, quarterback Michael Vick is now a Jet, and wide receiver Jason Avant landed with the Carolina Panthers. Is that it? Let's see. Yeah, there was one other little move that got almost no attention. It happened rather mysteriously. The Eagles, on March 28th, releasing DeSean Jackson. Now, in case you've forgotten, D-Jax had a pretty darn good 2013 season. 82 catches, 1,332 yards. That's more than 16 yards per catch, and 9 touchdowns. But Chip Kelly and GM Howie Roseman, after saying pretty much nothing about the move for a month, told us with straight faces 2 weeks ago that the decision to part with Jackson was purely a football decision, right? Yeah, purely a football move. It had nothing to do with anything else. Say, if Chip and Howie both said it, must be true. So, to recap, several key guys have been re-signed. Darren Sproles and Matt Sanchez are now Eagles. DeSean Jackson is a Redskin. Vic and Avant are gone, too. And now the Birds are getting ready for the 2014 draft, and fans are wondering, will the Eagles stay at number 22? Might they trade down? There are a few experts who think they might even trade up. We'll talk about that in a bit. Will they take a wide receiver in the first round or wait till the second round? You know they're going to get one or two receivers. There are, in fact, 10 or maybe even a dozen receivers expected to be taken in the first two rounds. Lots of other questions, and we're going to try to come up with at least some of those answers over the next 50 minutes or so. Bill and Fran, I'm winded, but I think that's pretty much what has happened with the Birds offensively since January. So now what?
Well, I mean, I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head there, Chet. I mean, it'll be very interesting to see over the next few days here what other pieces are added to this offensive scheme. But obviously it's a very talented group that put up great numbers last year, and obviously you got to replace that production that you lost with DeSean Jackson. But, I mean, you got Jeremy Maclin coming back from injury, and you're looking to replace. Again, you're looking to replace 80 catches, 1,300 yards. You figure with Maclin coming back from injury, another year of Zach Ertz, who I think is going to take a huge jump this fall. You have Riley Cooper coming back. You mentioned the receivers coming off injury, Regis Ben. Obviously, Darren Sproles coming into the fold. You know he's going to get some catches going his way as well. You would think, and then any player that they add this weekend, you would think that they'll be able to replace that production. So it'll be very interesting to see. I mean, this offense, you know, has all the tools that they'll need to have success in the fall.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm excited, too. I want to see how he gets all these guys on the field and gets them all the football. I think that's going to be fun to watch. And I guess my real question going into the draft from the receiver standpoint is, what is it that Chip Kelly wants? You know, does he want a speedster, DeSean Jackson-type guy that can spread the field? Does he want a big space guy like a Riley Cooper-type guy? You know, pretty hard to have both of those. Mike Evans might be one that might be kind of close to that, but probably not available come the Eagles. I'm interested to see receiver-wise, because there's a load of good ones out there, and to see where they go. And quite frankly, we'll get to this, but I think that's a second-round pick for the Birds.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, Fran, is there a specific kind of receiver that Chip Kelly wants? I mean, we hear he likes the big receivers, but yet, I mean, there's also talk that he may consider taking Brandon Cooks, who's about the same size as Jackson. Does he need a specific kind? Does it have to be a big guy? Does it have to be a fast guy? Do we know exactly what Chip wants?
Oh, I don't think anybody knows exactly what he wants. And obviously, me being on the outside of it, it's tough to say. But one thing I think you can say with certainty is that whatever he has at his disposal, he'll use it in the best way. You know, it's funny that the phrase that used to be thrown around in Philadelphia for years was, you know, put the players in position to succeed. And I think Chip does that better than anybody. You know, he'll see what skill set these guys bring to the table. Whoever he's got on the field, he's going to use them to the best of their ability. So whether it's a big guy, whether it's a smaller guy, if they succeed in jump balls, if they like yards after catch, you know, whatever works best, however you can best utilize that skill set, I think that's what you're going to see.
Hey, before we talk about some specific names as far as who the Eagles might draft, the Eagles right now have a lot of guys at the running back position. There's, of course, Shady McCoy. There's Sproles, who they just acquired from the Saints. But there's also Chris Polk and Bryce Brown. Any chance the Eagles might trade one of those guys for, say, a mid-round draft pick or, you know, try to stock up on some more picks by using some of these positions where they are a bit overloaded? Could they possibly trade one of these guys?
I mean, you know, it remains to be seen. I mean, you remember last year they carried four backs on the 53. You had Matthew Tucker out of TCU, was an undrafted free agent last year, and he was on the 53-man roster. So, you know, I don't think it's a doubt, really, that they could go into the season with all four of those backs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's talk a little defense. I think we know that the defense must get better. The offense at times scored like they were playing pinball, but sometimes the defense was giving up points like they were playing pinball. But let me hit you with five facts before we start talking about some players. The Eagles' defense saw more plays from scrimmage than any team in the league at 1,150. And just to put that in perspective, the Saints saw the least at 943. That's 207 more plays that the Eagles' defense was on the field. So that blows up the numbers just a little bit, but in that they were 29th of 32 in yards allowed with 394 per game. Only Chicago, Minnesota, and Dallas were worse. Of course, if you're on the field more, you know, you're going to give up more yards. So that offsets that, but if you look at the next two, which are actually broken down into percentages, they were the fourth least rushing yards allowed in the NFL at 3.8, which that surprised me as I was looking at it. But the flip side was they were dead last in passing yards allowed at 289.8 yards a game. And also the opponents threw 41.9 times a game against the Eagles. Now, you know, there's several reasons for that. One is they didn't rush the quarterback. Two is they couldn't cover. Or three is the offense was scoring so fast or was off the field that, you know, the defense was on the field a lot, thus giving up a much more attempts. So there's a lot of things that go into all that. And with those things said, as far as points per game allowed at 23.9, they were dead in the middle. They were 16 out of 32. So, you know, I think those numbers can all improve, but I guess the bottom line is it has to improve if the Eagles are going to continue to progress the way it looks like they're capable of. So
that being said,
I'm sorry?
Yeah, that being said, I wanted to jump in and ask Fran, where does he see the Eagles' biggest needs defensively? Is it another pass rusher? Is it an outside linebacker? Or is it more help in the defensive secondary?
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, with the moves that they've made this offseason, I think they've kind of gone into this draft where they're not pigeonholed into having to address any one area. You know, so all the guys that they've brought in, you know, they haven't really said, like, okay, you know, we need to get a safety. Obviously, we brought in Malcolm Jenkins. You brought back Nate Allen. So you've got three guys along with Earl Wolfe who's got starting experience, who's proved that at least that you could, if you had to line up and play on Sunday, that you can go out and you can play. You can play, you know, with this 11 that you've got here on defense. You know, obviously, you know, getting some more pass rush would be something that, you know, any team is going to ask for. So obviously that could be in the cards. Adding another corner. Obviously, you brought in Nolan Carroll. You have Brandon Boykin in the slot, who's one of the best slot corners in the league. You've got two other corners on the outside, and Bradley Fletcher and Kyrie Williams, who I thought played very well last year. You know, I think they're putting themselves in a position where they don't need to say, like, okay, we need a safety, we need a corner, and we need a pass rusher, and we need those in the first three of the first four picks. I don't think that's the way you're going to see this team approach the draft this year.
All right. Bill, what else do you have on the defense?
I agree. Yeah, I agree. You know, as I broke this down, right now on a 53-man, there's 31 defensive players. And the only ones gone from last year's is Clifton Gathers is gone, Patrick Chung is gone, Kirk Coleman is gone,
yeah.
And Colt Anderson are gone. Everyone else is still here. So if you look at it that way, all but one starter returns. Malcolm Jenkins will take that spot. As you said, we have Jenkins, Allen, Wolf, Keelan Johnson, and Chris Maragos, who they signed as a free agent, as the safeties. The corners, Bradley Fletcher and Kerry Williams, are solid. Boykin, as you said, Carmichael, Curtis Marsh, and Nolan Carroll was signed. So they added there. The linebackers, now, that to me, this is the tricky part. Barwin, Ryans, Kendricks, and Cole are all back. Casey Matthews, Jake Knott, Brandon Graham. We brought in Brian Brayman. We got a couple practice squad guys, Echo and Long, and, you know, a couple others. I'll get to that. Let's go to the defensive line first. We have Thornton, Logan, Cox, Damian Square, Vinnie Curry, and then Brandon Bear, who was a practice squad guy, Joe Kruger, and Alejandro Villanueva, the 6'9", 277-pound Army player who was just signed the other day. But before I go back to the linebackers, I do want to ask you, Fran, if as I was looking up some information here, Joe Kruger, I don't know him, 6'6", 269 pounds, out of Utah, defensive lineman, defensive end. Second, he's already played 2 years in the NFL, and he is still 21 years old. Is he a diamond in the rough sitting somewhere?
Well, I mean, he was on the practice squad last year. Actually, he may have been on injured reserve last year, but he was a sixth-round pick last year in Chip Kelly's first draft. Came in, then obviously wanted to see him put a little weight on, and they put a little weight on him. I thought he got better throughout training camp and throughout the preseason, which was really good to see. And obviously, I mean, look, he didn't play at all last year, and you had a guy, look at Cedric Thornton, who in 2011 didn't play a snap, spent the entire season pretty much on the practice squad. I think he was called up to the 53 for the final 2 or 3 weeks, but didn't play, came in 2012, started to kind of, you know, get into the swing of things and played in the rotation. And then in 2013, I mean, I thought he was maybe the most consistent player from week 1 to week 17 on that defense, along with D'Amico Ryans and Fletcher Cox. I mean, Sid Thornton was one of the best players on that defense. So, you know, can Kruger make that similar jump? You know, perhaps, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, moving forward, because you lose Clifton Gathers, you need some depth there on that defensive line, and Kruger could bring that.
Yeah,
hey,
yeah,
Fran, the guy that Bill mentioned, the Army Ranger, Villanueva, I mean, that's a nice story, but is that just like a courtesy signing, or does this guy actually have a shot at making the team? I know he played wide receiver in college, but the Eagles are going to try him at defensive end. He's certainly got the size, 6'9", 277. Any shot of him actually being a player and making the team?
Oh, I mean, your guess is as good as mine, because none of us have seen him play football in, you know, 4 years now. So it'll be interesting. I mean, look, the guy's got the frame, he's got the athleticism, and, you know, obviously it's going to take a lot of work. Do I think he's going to come in and, you know, get, you know, 13 sacks this year? I don't think so. But, you know, he could be a guy that you try and develop. You stick on a, you know, on a practice squad, or, you know, keep on the roster moving forward and see if you can develop him. So at this point, when the roster is so large, you can add players like that into your team and try and see if you can develop them in your program.
True.
Well, I'm going to go out on the ledge. I'm going to go back to my linebackers. I'm not a real fan of any of the reserves. I don't know Brian Braman enough. I haven't seen him play enough. But and I think Trent Cole has probably done all that he can do, and I don't really like him at the linebacker spot. I like him a lot as a defensive end. So I'm going out on a limb, and the guy I want to see them draft, I'm looking for somebody who is just a bad dude, just comes in and just kicks butt and is a bad dude. So I don't know that he'll be around. We'll find out when we get to your board, Fran, but I'd like to see C.J. Mosley be an Eagle. And if he can only play inside, move Michael Kendricks outside. If he can play outside, put him outside. I just think he's a mean human, and I'd like to see him as their number one. If he's not available, I would go Anthony Barr number two, but I'm a little concerned. I've seen too many things about him where maybe he doesn't have the work ethic that's needed in the league, and so he would fall down for me. And then Clinton Dix as a safety probably will be gone long before our turn. And Calvin Pryor is my number four guy, only because he's a crazy physical guy that likes to hit, but I'm not sure he's really good enough to be a 22nd pick. So they're my guys. We'll find out how they match up to your board, Fran, a little bit later on as we get on with the show. Okay. Hey, Chet.
Yeah.
Did you forget by chance that Mother's Day is coming up this Sunday?
I know that it is, Bill. Believe me.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, how would you like to get your cash back on all your online purchases through over 500 stores at the same time? Each of your purchases benefits our friends at the Kisses for Kyle Foundation.
Well, you know that I'm cheap, so I like saving things, and I like getting cash back. Plus, I like supporting Kisses for Kyle, too. It's such a great organization. So what do we have to do?
Absolutely. Here's what you do. Go to our sponsor, www.shopforkisses.org. Click on the register button on the top right-hand corner. Become a preferred customer free of charge. Click on the All Stores tab. If you already know where you want to shop, and begin shopping. That easy. You can even comparison shop on the site and have the number one selling internet cosmetic line in the world called Motives. Great gifts for mom, too. Check it out. It's a great way to make mom happy on Mother's Day, get a little money back, and help families dealing with childhood cancer through the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give them a call at 484-319-8043. That's 484-319-8043. We will post this contact information on our Facebook page, Philly Press Box Radio, as well. Be sure to tell them you heard about them from Philly Press Box Radio. Okay, Chet, let's move along. Let's hit special teams, but let's give our listeners a reminder that our phone lines will be open right after we finish the special teams, and it is 929-477-2855, and we'll take your call as soon as we can. But, Chet, let's hit the special teams.
All right, Bill. The defense was strengthened with the additions of safeties Malcolm Jenkins and Chris Maragos, linebacker Brian Braman, and cornerback Nolan Carroll. We talked about all those guys. And even the special teams received a boost with the re-signing of punter Donnie Jones after his great year. Plus, most of the aforementioned defensive players have extensive experience on special teams. So look for Braman, Maragos, and even Carroll perhaps to contribute to special teams. And they could use some help because I just saw a story the other day that based on everything in terms of, you know, yards allowed, return yardage from your kick crew, et cetera, the Eagles ranked only 25th overall in terms of special teams play last year. Andy Reid, his Kansas City Chiefs, ranked number one, by the way, in that finding. The kick return game definitely needs some work. Demaris Johnson, he was 12th in the league last year, but he was never really a threat to break anything, it seemed. His long return was 33 yards. I think we need a little bit more firepower there. Hopefully Darren Sproles will help out. 790 yards in returns on the kick for the Eagles, and that compares to their opponents who had 1,229 return yards, so about 50% more than the Eagles had. So the kick return game needs a little work. The Eagles also need a better season in 2014 from place kicker Alex Henry. Now, he wasn't terrible last year. 23 out of 28 works out to 82%, which sounds good, but he did have some memorable misses, including that 48-yard attempt in the playoff loss to the Saints. And Chip Kelly didn't seem to have a lot of confidence in Henry for long-range attempts of 45 yards or more. In fact, he attempted just two kicks of 50 yards or longer, making one of them, missing the other. Also, some of his kickoffs fell woefully short. He was ranked 27th in the league in terms of how deep he was able to get his kickoffs. So that's not very good, 27 out of 32 or so. So don't be surprised if the Eagles bring in a kicker to compete with Henry, something that they didn't do last year. Henry, by the way, just 5 of 11 in his career from 45-plus yards in terms of field goal attempts. So there is definitely some room for improvement on special teams. Hopefully some of these new guys that were brought in on defense, like Brayman, Maragos, and Carroll, perhaps can help out. And, of course, Darren Sproles in the return game will be the big thing to watch. What do you guys think?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think by midseason, one of the fans' favorite players on the team is going to be Brian Brayman. I'm pretty good friends. I know a lot of these guys in the media, national media. We'll get into it a little bit later when I start talking about some of these players and what I've heard from guys in the media. But one of my good friends is Lance Zierlein, who does Houston radio down there in Houston. His dad is Larry Zierlein, one of the famous O-line coaches in the NFL. He's very, very much in tune with the pro game, and obviously being in Houston, got a good look at Brian Brayman, just a crazy, crazy special teamer, and a guy who, you know, makes plays, you know, when he loses his helmet and tackling guys, and, you know, he comes up with the bloody nose, you know, like one of these guys is really going to be endearing to some of these fans. I think, you know, he and Maragos are going to have quite an impact on special teams this fall.
So you're
looking
saying I need to order my number 56 jersey now? They're the kind of guys I like.
Get it going. I'm telling you, this, and I think as well, Lance was surprised that Houston didn't use him on defense more because in the preseason he showed the ability to get after the passer. So I think Brayman will be a good player for this team.
I like it. I like it. Well, maybe he becomes that bad dude that I'm looking for to be that outside linebacker, the rush quarterback. Maybe we have him instead.
There you go.
All right, well, we've talked a lot of needs on both sides of the ball. So, Fran, we're going to pass it over to you. It's your team. It's your draft. Set your positions for us first, priorities, as you see in our six picks.
Well, I mean, like I said earlier, I don't know that you go in thinking that, you know, there's going to be too many priorities. I would say that you know, it's going to depend on how the board plays out. So I'll just kind of go through some guys that I feel pretty strongly about in the first couple of rounds, guys that, you know, could potentially be good fits. And, you know, obviously being on the outside, I don't know anything for sure, but, you know, like I said, could be good fits in Philadelphia. You know, one guy as a pass rusher that some people like and some people don't is Anthony Barr out of UCLA. This fall is his second year playing on the defensive side of the ball. Super athletic kid. He's, you know, shows the ability to bend on the edge, can beat tackles with speed around the corner. Like I said, it's only his second year playing on the defensive side of the ball, so there's some technique things you want to see him improve on. Obviously, he's got to get a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, but he's got the ability to be a dynamic edge rusher from that linebacker position. He's got the length that you want, has the athleticism. Like I said, the ability to drop into coverage obviously is not to the case that we saw Deion Jordan coming out last year at Oregon, but just a dynamic athlete that, you know, some people see. I'll tell you what, I've heard from some people that the Cowboys at 16 won't let him fall past them and that they'll take him not only to play as a linebacker but as a defensive end, which was very surprising to me because, you know, when you talk to people around the league and the media, a lot of the things that they're hearing from scouts are that, you know, he's not really great at the point of attack, and you can run at him consistently. So it would be interesting to see if he ended up there as a defensive end, how he was employed from an early stage. So Anthony Barr is a guy I really, really like, though. Ton of potential, and shows the ability, like I said, to get after the quarterback.
Fran, I've seen several mock drafts, by the way. I've seen several mock drafts where Anthony Barr would be going number 11 to the Tennessee Titans. It appears that they have a strong interest in him.
No doubt. I mean, I think he could. I mean, he's a top 10 type talent to me just because of his pure athleticism. Now, will he go top 10? Probably not, but it's not looking like it's going to shake out that way. But 11 to Tennessee is, you know, absolutely a possibility if they decide to go that way, or if not corner or quarterback. But Anthony Barr, I mean, you could see him going at 11 to Tennessee. Like I said, I don't think he's fallen past Dallas at 16, but, you know, the Giants, I don't think that they could use a pass rusher there. Pittsburgh, possibly. But, you know, I think if you're going to get a guy like Anthony Barr, you've got to get into that range of, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. So, you know, he'll be a name to watch. I think HaHa Clinton Dix is a really good player, a really good safety, one of the more athletic players at the position in this draft class. A guy who can play sideline to sideline, shows good ball skills, obviously lined up at Alabama secondary from Nick Saban for the past couple of years. Intangibles off the charts, has the ability to, you know, to line them up, and was one of the leaders of that defense. It'll be interesting to see where he falls, because I know some people aren't as crazy about him in terms of, you know, coming down and being a physical box, you know, box player. But I think he showed the ability to run the alley. He'll make tackles along the edge. I think he's the kind of versatile safety that's a good fit for today's NFL. At the receiver position, I mean, you know, pick what you want. I mean, if you want a big kid who's going to win at the catch point, obviously Mike Evans. But I don't see a scenario where Mike Evans is falling outside the top seven. I think he could go as early as four. I think he's not falling past Tampa Bay at the seven, with the seventh pick. So, you know, Mike Evans is obviously one of the elite talents in this draft class, but it doesn't end there with receiver. I mean, you've got Odell Beckham out of LSU, who, a personal favorite of mine. I'm a huge, huge fan of Odell Beckham. I think he's a top 12, top 15 talent in the draft. He's got unbelievable hands, wins at the catch point, runs great routes, which is something you don't usually see from some of these college kids, but runs great routes, is really physical as a blocker. And like I said, it shows the ability to win contested catches, which for an athletic receiver, a good route runner, the ability to, again, win contested situations against defensive backs, he's a total package at the receiver position. You know, obviously Marquise Lee is a great talent. People thought that he could be a top five, top 10 pick a couple years ago. Had the down year this year because of the knee injury and, you know, subpar quarterback play. But I think he's a guy who can come in and play right away, especially in an offense like this where you get him the ball in space and let him run. He's a great yard after catch guy. He's got, you know, quick. The hands were a little bit inconsistent over the last year or two, a lot of drops on tape, but he makes up for it with his playmaking ability. And I know I've talked with, you know, some former GMs that are in the media now that say, you know, when they would evaluate the receiver position, they'll take a guy that, you know, will have some drops or two on the outside if he makes up for that and has that game-breaking ability. And I think Marquise Lee has that. You know, obviously another name that's being thrown around is Brandon Cooks out of Oregon State. You know, hasn't had some DeSean Jackson comparisons with his, you know, dynamic playmaking ability, great yard after catch guy. You can use him on screens. You can use him in the vertical passing game. You can use him on reverses. Really can just be moved all around the formation. He was in Oregon State. And the thing I like about Brandon Cooks, too, is that he played in a pro-style offense for Mike Riley out there at Oregon State. So, you know, he ran a full route tree. He was asked to do a lot there. So another guy who, you know, you get the ball in his hands and he can make things happen. And it can also help on special teams as well. So receiver position, just loaded with different options. And if you want to go defense,
yeah, I'm a big Lee fan. I like Marquise Lee. I liked him a real lot 2 years ago. And like you said, he had some problems this past year. But I like him a lot out of USC.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, a viable option. Like I said, I think he's a great fit as well. And obviously a guy who Chip Kelly got a good look at when he was out at Oregon. So, you know, absolutely a definite option. You know, and if you want to get to the cornerback position, at 22, I don't know that there's a guy there that, you know, maybe you pull the trigger on, but, you know, you look at a Bradley Roby, who I think is the best corner in this draft. You know, some people like Justin Gilbert, Darqueze Dennard. I'll take Roby over any of them. If he'd come out last year as a redshirt sophomore, I think he would have been a top 10 pick. Had some issues this year, and people point to the Wisconsin game against Jared Aberdaris, who's coming out this year, will be a slot receiver, probably a mid-round pick. Aberdaris torched him. And Roby was employed in a scheme that really asked him to play to one side of the field pretty repeatedly, you know, consistently game after game after game. And in that game against Wisconsin, with Aberdaris being the threat that he was in the Big Ten, they had him follow Aberdaris all over the field, and he actually saw some reps in the slot. And I never saw Roby play in the slot. And as you guys know, you know, playing outside corner and then shifting into the slot is a whole different animal. We saw that with Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie in 2011. You know, you can be as talented as you want, but you have to have discipline. You have to know how to play in the slot. And when they, you know, they asked him to play in the slot for that game, and he just wasn't prepared for a guy like Aberdaris, who, you know, who beat him with his route running and was able to get a couple big plays on him. So, regardless, like I said, I think Bradley Roby is the most talented corner in this class, as a big physical kid who can run as well. So, you know, a ton of options out there. I mean, you talk about C.J. Mosley as well. I mean, there's plenty of guys that I think are viable options. There's a great group coming out in this year. So, it'll be really interesting, a really fun weekend over the next few days.
All right, let's we got a caller here. Let's jump on and let's see what we got. Hey, who we got here? You're talking to Bill, Chad, and Fran on Philly Press Box Radio.
Hey guys, this is Terry calling. How you guys doing?
Good,
hey, Terry. How are you?
Hey, Terry.
Good. It's been a great show so far. I really enjoyed it. A lot of great points. The draft obviously is a it's a great time of the year for all of us football junkies. So I know you guys are just as excited as I am. So as it pertains to the Eagles, I just wanted to make a few quick comments about a few of the players that you mentioned, and then I actually had a question for you guys as it pertains to the defensive line and the scheme that the Eagles are going to maybe transition into. As it pertains to a few players, one of the notes that I wanted to add was on Anthony Barr. Coming out of high school, he was actually a pretty highly touted linebacker, and as well as a running back. And he ended up at UCLA playing on the offensive side of the ball, and he actually morphed into more of an H-back because he's 6'4", you know, 230 pounds. But he did have, obviously, a background at linebacker prior to the move when Mora came in. But the kid is a tremendous athlete, you know, could be a very dominant player in the NFL. So if the Eagles were lucky enough to either move up a little bit or if he falls into their lap, as you guys all pointed out, that would be a that'd be quite the get for their defense, and they would have truly an outside linebacker that could most certainly put his hand in the dirt if he needed to, but also, you know, play up and get out there in space if need be. So I just wanted to add that on Anthony Barr. And as it pertains to the wide receivers, which is, as you guys mentioned, is one of the big needs. Like Bill said, I think Marquise Lee would be one player that would fit tremendously into what Chip Kelly does. And if anybody knows Marquise Lee and what he's capable of, Chip Kelly is that guy. I think he had over 20 catches in two games and over 400-plus yards with three touchdowns, two of which were of the longer variety, about 50 or 60 yards. So, and the great thing about Marquise Lee is he can play the X, he can play the Z, he can play the slot. As you pointed out, Fran, he most certainly is a guy that's very sudden. If you get him the ball in space, it's very difficult for defensive backs and linebackers to deal with him. And his 40 time at the combine was concerning for a few people, but that guy on tape, that guy in a real game of football, he separates. He really does separate. And more so than even some of the guys that might be rated higher than him, I think he would be the absolute perfect fit for what the Eagles are doing and what they need, especially when you lose a player like DeSean Jackson, where teams bracket and do different things to, you know, to alleviate some of the pressure of him stretching the field vertically. He would be a guy that would step in and most certainly round out that receiving core. And then as it pertains to Brandon Cooks and some of those guys, I just wanted to say a few things as well. Cooks is a fantastic player, probably a number two guy in the NFL. I don't know if you know, he has the ability to be that main guy, but he'll probably be a longtime NFL player and have a really solid career. But, you know, for my money, if I'm looking at those guys that might be available, as Evans is probably gone, as Bill pointed out, as you guys pointed out, you know, Marquise Lee would probably be the guy. And then the one question that I had for all of you guys was, the one thing that I haven't heard a lot about was with the scheme, with the Eagles moving to the 34 defense last year, but not really having the true, you know, personnel up front to really run that, like a prototypical 34 defense, they kind of ran more of like a 43-52 kind of hybrid, if you will, with, you know, utilizing more of like that three technique. What if Lewis Nix or someone like that, a true zero-shade defensive tackle was available, or a nose guard was available? Is that something that, you know, you guys feel the Eagles might look at? And I'll go ahead and listen to your comments.
Thanks, Terry. And let's have Fran take a shot at that answer.
Thanks, Terry. Terry, first of all, great call, man. That's good stuff, man. Obviously you know the game pretty well. I think one of the things with Nix, and really with that nose tackle position, you've seen a lot of those type of guys fall into the mid rounds in recent years, and I think one of the reasons for that is that very rarely now, with the advent of the passing game, teams now are in their sub packages more often than not. And that's why the slot corner has become such an important position, because you're in that nickel, you're in your dime packages so often. It's very rare that you line up in your base 3-4 defense. So obviously last year you saw Sed Thornton line up over the nose. You saw Benny Logan, who's a little bit smaller. Obviously he's put on some weight for this fall, but last year played at a lighter weight than at their typical 3-4 nose tackle would. And I think that's kind of what today's game is. If you've kind of gotten away from those big two-down run stuffers that are going to line up over center and dominate the Casey Hamptons of the world and those type of players. And I think that's kind of where you're seeing. And with Nix, I think there's some worries there in terms of his consistency and obviously his medical as well. There were some issues with his knees this year. So it'll be interesting to see where he ends up. But I think obviously he's a viable option. I think San Diego is really hot on him, Green Bay as well in the first round. So you could see him go in that range.
Hey, friend, one quick question. You were talking about the wide receivers a little bit ago. Adam Kaplan has repeatedly reported that the Eagles are interested in trading up into the top 10 to get Mike Evans out of Texas A&M. A lot of mock drafts have him going number 7 overall to, I guess, Tampa Bay, that would be. Do you think there might be any truth that the Eagles would trade up that high to get a guy like Evans?
Oh, I couldn't say. I mean, I know Adam personally. I know he's obviously got his sources. But being on the outside, I'd have no idea. I've got no clue. I just kind of follow the same reports that you guys do. But obviously, I mean, you've got 6 picks in this draft. Howie Roseman said to the media the other day that he wouldn't be afraid to spend some of those picks to move up. So how much would you have to give up to move from 22 to, say, 6 or 5 or 4 to make sure that you get a Mike Evans? And how much that would take, you're probably talking about, at least spending your 1 this year and probably your 1 next year and your 2 this year. So it's a lot of picks to move up. It'll be interesting to see if they decide to do that. And obviously, if you're moving up for a guy like Evans, obviously you've got a plan for him and you know how you're going to use him.
Yeah, unless they really, really, really love him. I don't see it happening, especially with so many other wide receivers on the board that can help. So I don't think it's going to happen, but you never know.
Nope, no doubt, exactly. We'll find out. We've got about 24 hours here.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Terry, we appreciate the call. Fran, it's showtime. It's time for your big board, but I do have a couple questions for you before we get started. Just in the last day or so, it was reported about these 10 positive drug tests, and my question to you is, how does that affect the draft? And you have a guy like Timmy Jernigan out of Florida State, projected as a mid-first-round pick, and here he tests positive. Same thing happened some years ago with Warren Sapp. He dropped down deep in the first round for the same reason, and he ended up in the Hall of Fame. So that's one question. And my second question to you is, how does a guy like Teddy Bridgewater finish the bowl season as the top quarterback in the country? He plays no games between then and now and seems to have dropped like a rock. And I saw somebody's mock draft just this morning and had him all the way down as a third rounder. So I'm curious about those couple things, and then we'll turn you loose for your big board.
All right, so I'll try and answer these quickly. I think with the first one, as far as the drug test of the combine, I would equate it really to a guy who goes to the combine and runs a slow 40. Obviously, you're not going to, a guy running in the 4.7s isn't going to drop you completely off his board, but it's going to be part of the main picture, of what all the work, the years, months worth of work that you've done on this player. And it's the same thing with, if there's a failed drug test, that's going to be part of all that background work that you've done on that kid. If, he's had a clean pass and you have, there was some kind of an issue with that. I think that's kind of what's come out with, with Jernigan or Mettenberger and some of these other guys that have been, that reported with these drug tests. I mean, if there was a real reason for it, and there's nothing else in their past to say that they would do that, then it won't affect them too much. But if the guy's got a history of issues like this, and this is just another, this could be the straw that broke the camel's back. So, I think it'll be different for all those guys. And, obviously we'll see how it pans out over the next 2 days. The second part is something that I've been wondering myself, and I, talking with people, I'm starting to I see where people are coming from, and I understand what the thinking is here as far as it goes with Bridgewater, a guy who, to me, is the best quarterback in this draft, and it's not a question. Has shown the ability to be obviously an accurate passer. I don't think he's got the strongest arm, but I think he's got a good enough arm. He's not a big kid, and that's one of the issues that teams have is that he's, you know, on the lighter side. He came in at over 210 pounds, but he played last year at around 190. And there's no 190-pound starting quarterbacks in the NFL because, you know, even Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, the smaller guys are in that 215, 220 range. So people are worried about that and how that's going to, you know, impact his ability to be able to stay healthy in the NFL. Teams that didn't get a chance to see him throw live, you know, the GMs, the decision makers, the head coaches and offense coordinators and quarterbacks coaches obviously are, you know, involved in their season in the fall. They get a chance to see him throw live at the combine and he doesn't throw. So now everyone goes to his pro day and he had a bad pro day. I mean, that's what that is. What it is. He had a bad pro day. And, you know, John Gruden said it this week that if he went to a live workout and a guy had a bad workout, he would move them, not just move them down, but he would take them off their board. If they did not perform well in his eyes, he would take them off the board. Now, do I, you know, agree with that? I don't know how much stock I put into it, but, you know, that's where teams are at now, where, you know, you went, you saw, and you can't get that image out of your head of him throwing those ducks all over the field at his pro day, and then every time you see a ball that doesn't, you know, may not have all the mustard on it that you see on tape after you leave and you come back, now that's what's going in your head. You're saying, oh, yeah, this is verifying what I saw when I went and I saw him throw live at Louisville. So, like I said, on tape, and this is from people that I've talked to too, you know, I know I've talked with all these guys in the media that, you know, that are here, that you're hearing talk about Bridgewater right now. You know, I talked about, you know, talked with these guys all through the fall, through the winter, and now through the spring. When they watched all the guys on tape before the All-Star games and the combine, Bridgewater was number one. And now you're seeing, you know, obviously he went to the pro day, and it's a mixture of obviously what they saw live. I talked to guys that were at the pro day, you know, some of the media guys that were there, and they said the same thing. They said, "Hey, you know, what is with this guy? You know, Todd McShay, what is with this guy? Like, how come the ball's coming out of his hand like this?" And you just can't shake it. And I think that's the way that some of these teams are feeling as well. And I think part of it, this is something that teams are kind of leaking out as we get through the process here. But, you know, people maybe overscold Bridgewater as what teams maybe thought he was. So maybe it's not necessarily a huge fall. Maybe teams saw him as a borderline first-round pick to begin with. And now with this pro day, maybe that's, you know, what's causing the fall. So I think it's a mixture of things, but I'll tell you what. If we get to tomorrow night and Jacksonville takes them third overall, all is forgiven, right? Now we're not worried about this anymore. Now it's time to go play football.
That's right. That's right. All right, well, let's hit your board real quick.
All right. Well, I mean, it's an interesting thing to do, and obviously it's tough because, you know, I'm not evaluating for any one team. You got to take all teams into account. But really quick, I'll just kind of dive through this a bit. Obviously, Clowney, I think, is the best player in this draft. Obviously, there's some off-field concerns that teams are going to have, and I'm not privy to any of that information, so I don't know all the details of that. But if you're going straight off the tape, I mean, Clowney's the most explosive pass rusher in the draft. I think he's the most explosive player in the draft. Just a freak talent who's got, you know, otherworldly ability. I think Bridgewater's number two, and I think that because when you have a guy who I think can be a quality starting quarterback, I think that trumps everything else. And I've talked with other guys, you know, in the media about this and kind of shared that same opinion, that if you've got a guy who you think can be a quality starting quarterback, that'll trump guys who could be a quality offensive tackle. I think Bridgewater can be, you know, like I said, I talked about some of his positive traits. I think he shows next-level ability in terms of the mental side of the game, some of the little things that he did in terms of manipulating safeties and linebackers with pump fakes and looking safeties off and, you know, throwing to the opposite hash. You know, a lot of nuances to the game that I thought he brought. And now I don't know him personally. I don't know what his personality is like. And obviously I wasn't there at this pro day, so I can't verify that. But I'm just going off of what, you know, I see with my own eyes and the work that I've done. Next, I've got Jake Matthews. I think Matthews is a better player right now than Greg Robinson. I think Robinson's a risk, but obviously he's got great talent. I think Robinson's got the ability to be a better player. He's got a higher ceiling. But Matthews, to me, is much safer picking in a position where technique is so important. I think Matthews is the guy I take over there. Number four, I've got Sammy Watkins out of Clemson. Obviously the most dynamic playmaker in this draft.
just really, if he was 3 inches tall, I think you're talking about him as a lock for maybe number one, because he's just an unbelievable talent, probably the best receiver, definitely since the 2011 draft with Julio Jones and A.J. Green, and maybe you can make an argument the best prospect since Calvin Johnson. At five, I've got Aaron Donald, the defensive tackle out of Pitt, who I think was just absolutely dominant in every phase. I mean, he had great junior tape. I remember watching him as a junior and just, you know, wow. And then, you know, watching his senior tape, I mean, he dominated every single game I watched him in this year. Went down to the Senior Bowl. I was at the Senior Bowl, and he just dominated every day of practice, was dominant in the game, went to the combine, tore up the combine. So you're just checking all these boxes with Aaron Donald, and you've got a guy who I think is going to be a dominant three technique in the next level. Number six, I think C.J. Mosley, Bill, a guy that you brought up. Number six for me is C.J. Mosley. From what I've heard, this kid is just A-plus off the charts in terms of his intangibles and his ability to line up a defense, his command in the locker room. From everything that I've heard out of Alabama, he's a guy that you're going to bring in, and he has the ability to be a 10-year starter, was a great player on tape. And there's a worry with him right now, and that's why people kind of have him dropping, is that there's a medical issue that teams may be a little bit worried about. So that'll be interesting to check up on over the next few days. Number seven, Mike Evans. I've talked about him. I think he's an unbelievable talent, great at the catch point. Number eight, Anthony Barr. I've talked about him. I think he's one of the most dynamic defensive players in the draft. Number nine, and this is a guy who I think some people I've talked to think he's the best player in the draft, and that's Khalil Mack, a guy who I got to see playing as a true freshman when he was at Buffalo. I got to see him play up close and personal a couple times. He's a great talent. Do I think that he is better than Clowney? I don't think so. But, you know, it's something that I think has been an interesting debate over the last few months, and we'll just see how it all pans out. Number 10, Greg Robinson. I talked about a devastating run blocker. Has some work to do in pass protection with technique, but has the frame and the size to you know, really make you dream on him. Odell Beckham, a guy who I talked about, I think is one of the best players in this draft. Number 11 on my board. Number 12 is a guy, Dominique Easley out of Florida, coming off two torn ACLs in the past 3 years, but is just a terror. I mean, this kid, if he was healthy, I mean, you're talking about him as a top five pick, easy. The ACLs are going to drop him down the board a bit, obviously. I think he could go as high as maybe the latter stages of round one in New England, maybe at 30, but Dominique Easley is just unbelievable snap awareness, is the first guy off the ball for Florida. And from what I heard, when he went down this year, Florida knew they were shot. And after he was out, I mean, their defense just went down the tube. So Dominique Easley, player for me. Ha-ha Quentin Dix, I talked about earlier, number 13. Taylor Lewan, the tackle out of Michigan, number 14, a guy who I think I'm a little higher on than most, can play right or left tackle, and is just one of those mean linemen that plays with pretty good technique, has some work to do in that area, but obviously is also a great athlete, a guy who I think is scheme versatile, can play a number of different roles for you. 15, I've got Blake Bortles, a quarterback out of Central Florida. Big kid, ton of upside, has some work to do, and I think he's improved, you know, some of the little things with the quarterback position in terms of his feet and his release over the last couple of months as he's started to prepare for the NFL. I think pretty highly of Blake Bortles. I like Bridgewater more, but I like Bortles a ton. Eric Ebron, who I think is going to go in the top 10, the tight end out of North Carolina, a game-changer, early starter, who is just an absolute beast at the catch point. Has some drops, you know, some of those focus drops that you hate to see, but just made some of the best plays in college football last year. Number 17, Zach Martin, who I think could be a top 10 pick out of Notre Dame. Left tackle, some people see him as a guard. I think he could be any of the five positions on the offensive line and play it at a high level. Just a guy who I really, really loved on tape, and another one who really stood out when I saw him up in person down at the Senior Bowl. Number 18 is Kelvin Benjamin, the wide receiver out of Florida State, big kid who can run a little bit. Obviously didn't test really well at the combine, but big kid goes up and wins in contested situations. I think he's a pretty fluid mover. In some situations I saw that he was even more fluid than Mike Evans, who tested much better at the combine, but you saw they're different kinds of movers, but is a very talented kid, and you know, I think could, in the right situation, could flourish. Number 19, I got Timmy Jernigan. He's kind of getting a bad rap because he's not a dominant free technique. He's not a guy that's going to penetrate and, you know, get, you know, the high sack numbers or high TFL numbers, but I think he could go to a team like Dallas, where they need a nose tackle and a 4-3, a guy to play between the guard and the center, hold up at the point of attack and anchor and take on a couple blocks. And I think Jernigan can do that. I like Jernigan in that kind of role. I think that's where he fits best, and I like him in that kind of spot. Top 20, I've got Ryan Shazier, who is just one of the most athletic defenders that you see in this draft, a guy who can play sideline to sideline, ferocious tackler, has a bit of an injury history, but I think you've got one of the most explosive playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. 21, Cyrus Kwanja, a talented tackle out of Alabama, has some knee issues, but and you know really kind of got away from his technique this year a bit and struggled against Oklahoma, struggled against Virginia Tech, but a guy who, when he's on his game, has top 10 ability. So obviously a guy who I think has a pretty high ceiling. 22 is Jimmy Ward, one of my favorite players in this draft. Smaller kid, only about 190 pounds, 5'11", but really the most versatile safety. I think he's a four-tool safety in this draft. Can play single high, can play two-shell, can play man-to-man in the slot. The one play I always think of with Jimmy Ward playing against Kent State, against Dree Archer, who's one of the most explosive playmakers in the draft on the offensive side of the ball, lined up in the slot over Dree Archer, ran with him step for step down the field, 40 yards down the field, and came up with an interception. So he showed great ball skills, showed speed, showed athleticism, and it really I think is a safety that's a great fit in today's NFL. And I think he could play slot corner for some teams. So really just a versatile kid. I'll be interested to see where he ends up. Bradley Roby, I talked about from 23 out of Ohio State. Devontae Adams, the receiver out of Fresno State, you're just checking the boxes with him where, you know, everything he does everything incredibly well. If he ran a little bit better, I think people would be talking about him as a lock for the back end of the first round. I think he ran in the 4-5, but as a guy who's incredible at the catch point, doesn't have many drops on tape, had a limited route tree in that Fresno State offense, and I think that's kind of what's knocking him down a bit. 25, Zach Mettenberger, and I'll just kind of end it here with the top 25. But Zach Mettenberger is a guy who's a big, prototypical pocket passer, has one of the strongest arms in the draft behind Logan Thomas and Tom Savage out of Pitt. But he's a guy who really flourished this year in a pro-style offense from Cam Cameron, former NFL offensive coordinator, and really just flourished this year. Obviously had a great offensive skill players around him, but like I said, shows a great arm, showed that he could throw with anticipation, showed that he could improve his accuracy, which he did this year from his junior year, and just a really talented player overall.
Fran, you said Jimmy Ward, number 22 on your board. Does that mean the Eagles could take him?
Potentially. I mean, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see because, like I said, I think, he's one of those guys that is a versatile player on the defensive side of the ball that you can move around and have to do a number of different things. And they talked about that's why they liked Malcolm Jenkins, right, was that he was able to line up in the slot and line up deep and play in the box. And Ward showed the ability to do that. Now, there were guys that I left out of my top 25, or out of my top 22, rather, that – I think we'll go in the top 22. Johnny Manziel, for instance, I think we'll go in the top 20. There are other players. Justin Gilbert, I think, could go that high. Brandon Cooks and Marquise Lee could go that high. Calvin Pryor. So there are other guys that might bump some of these other players down. So it'll be interesting to see, how it all shakes out. But, just looking at who I think are the top players in this draft, I think that's Ward, to me, was number 22, just because I think he's a perfect fit in today's league.
My last question for you is, where do you think Manziel ends up?
Well, everything I've heard right now says St. Louis. And if it's not St. Louis, I think it's Tampa Bay. From what I've heard, those two teams are really, really high on him. I think St. Louis plans on taking him at 13, but with Tampa Bay sitting at 7, I'll throw out a scenario. Houston takes Khalil Mack, number 1 overall, which I think is a very, very real possibility. Houston takes Khalil Mack, number 1. Jadeveon Clowney falls to number 2. And St. Louis trades from 2 to 6 with Atlanta, who, from what I've heard, loves Jadeveon Clowney. Clowney goes number 2 to Atlanta. St. Louis moves back to 6, and they take Manziel at number 6.
Wow, okay.
I would say St. Louis, Tampa Bay, and outside, if I'm going to pick a third team, I'd say either Dallas or Cleveland for Manziel.
All right.
Well, Pat, I do have a couple questions, guys, to ask you about. Allen Robinson of Penn State, and you mentioned briefly Tom Savage out of Pitt, the Cardinal O'Hara kid, who's got his own story. He's bounced around all over the place. Where do you see with those guys?
I mean, Allen Robinson, I think, could possibly sneak into the back end of round 1. I mean, the only thing you're looking at with him, if you're looking at a great receiver prospect, you're looking at these Odell Beckhams, for instance, right? You look at, his abilities at catch point, his abilities as a route runner, his deep speed, his size, all those physical traits that you look for, he he's probably just a notch below what you would want at every single one of those spots. Now, the one thing that he's really, really good at, and you saw him make those kind of plays against Ohio State, against Wisconsin, against some of these talented teams that he went against, he's great after the catch. He's got great vision with the ball in his hands, and that's really his most redeeming quality. But again, the physical attributes with that team has kind of fallen in love with this time of year, maybe he's just a step down from some of these other guys. So I think that could hold him back a bit in terms of what his draft stock is ultimately. But, I mean, he could go to a team like, say, you know, San Francisco with the 30th pick, and I think he could flourish down there. So, you know, Allen Robinson, I think, is a good player. And then Tom Savage, is, obviously you alluded to, is a great story. He's got a great arm. Like I said, he's one of the top three arms in the draft with Mettenberger and Logan Thomas. Not really the best athlete, and I think that that comes into play in today's NFL. I think you have to have some kind of pocket mobility when you play a quarterback in the NFL at this point. But obviously a guy who had a couple of years between starting gigs, and I think that showed last year. He's got raw ability, but I don't think you can count on him to come in and play right away in today's NFL. I think he's going to have to take a little bit of time, a little bit of seasoning to really get into the swing of things and make an impact.
Okay. Very good. Well, that's getting us to the end of the show. We ran over a little bit, so we're not on live, but but anybody that listens to our podcast will be able to hear the whole show. So we continued on. And, Fran, I'd like to thank you for coming by and talking with us. It's been great and really interesting for myself and I think for Chet and for all Eagles fans.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks again.
All right. Chet, as always, fun to work with you, and we'll do it again.
Next week.
Next week. We'll be back on the air next Wednesday night, May 14th. Our special guest will be Mark Eckel, the Eagles beat writer for the Trenton Times. We'll be able to talk with Mark about who the Eagles do select and get his analysis of those picks. We'd also like to thank Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, as well as our sponsor, shopforkisses.org. We'd also like to remind everyone of the Eagles draft party tomorrow night, hosted by Riley Cooper and MJR Sports Collectibles at 1919 Bar and Grill, 1254 Westchester Pike in Havertown, Pennsylvania. For $40, you get a food buffet, an open bar, and a Riley Cooper autograph. And that'll be going on from 6 to 8 p.m. So for Jim Chesko, this is Bill Furman. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday night, May 14th at 7 p.m. to talk all things Philly sports. You can listen to our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.
P-S-T-L-E!